hello everyone. Welcome to Struggle Session. I'm Leslie III.
I'm Jack Allison.
We did our Meltdown Maze series and we thought we were done with it. We thought people were done completely losing their shit online for the year. We thought they had gotten it out of the way, but apparently that is not the case. If you have not had a chance to check out the discourse, the conversation, the things that happen online, they are some of the worst thing.
I think everybody's like, I really do feel like I'm like, maybe it's because it's the end of the year and this has just been such a wretched year or something like that. But people are like losing their shit in like a really, it's been extremely weird. We'll get into it, but yeah.
I was trying to think of a name of it for, I was thinking maybe Wildin' Out Winter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like, you know, it's not going to end. It's not going to be specific to December. I think it started around November. It's just going to keep growing because there's nothing else to do. The weather's turning bad. COVID spiking up, and it's just people are going to be more online. And they're going to be worse online.
Yeah, no, we're into the sort of, you know, second round of staying home for COVID. And, you know, a lot of people have just been home that whole time. But I think that this just the psychological, you know, the holidays basically being canceled and the second COVID wave coming and it's still not over. People have really been going apeshit. It's really been wild out there. Leslie, I've been playing more Grand Theft Auto online these days, and so I'll spend like an entire day not on Twitter and then come back on and just to like try to catch up with where the discourse has moved to. I'm like, this place is fucked up.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. I will start, you know, with kind of a lighter one, a sillier one, and one that we've seen in one form or another before. I'm not actually going to name the actual person because enough people have yelled at them, but there was a big long thread from this YA author that basically tried to cancel every classic book and say like they're bad and kids shouldn't read them. Moby Dick, it literally kills brain cells. Catcher in the Rye, stop. The Adventures of Huck Finn, can we stop with the racist books?
Oh man,
already.
Oh man,
Scarlet Letter, listen, anyone who tells you this is good writing has not read it in a million years. Anything by Hemingway is canceled because misogyny. I mean,
this is one of these things where I'm like, we should not all be on the same website. You know what I mean? Like, if you're on some YA message board and you want to post about how, like, Hemingway sucks and, like, you're on a YA message board. You know what I mean? You're on the YA subreddit at that point. So maybe there's like-minded people. It's so weird to just toss that into the general conversation. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just so weird to, like, in the middle of everything else be like, and you know what else? Fuck Moby Dick. Yeah. Everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about?
People were not happy with it, and I know we're very mean to YA sometimes. I know there's a lot of sweet people in YA who read YA, but like,
I'm reading YA. I'm reading the Extended Universe right now. That's YA.
Oh, okay, okay. You're reading some of the YA ones. And
I'll tell you what, it's for babies, pretty much. But I mean, I'm reading the New Jedi Order, but yeah, it's a little YA.
Yeah, the New Jedi Order. Yeah. It's so strange to me that YA is such a thing now, because when I was in high school, there was no such thing as YA. Like in elementary school and middle school, you read baby books.
Yeah.
And then when you got to high school, you just read books.
Like books, yeah.
Yeah, there was no middle period. And in fact, my earliest memory of the modern YA would be Harry Potter, and all the people who I knew were into that, they were all like 25. Like every single person I knew was into that was like 25 from like jump.
I guess it's always been around, but the being such a big part of people's lives when they're not young adults any longer maybe is new. But you know, I'm someone who still reads comic books, so you know, I don't know.
Like, yeah, that was YA back in the day.
It is funny. It's like I don't, except as a joke, I don't post like Batman's better than Moby Dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're just on, you know, it's just weird that we're all on this general forum together.
Yes. So another one that was, you know, pretty funny, annoying but funny, was the NYC New York bodega thing. This is another goodie too. So there's always this thing where there's this thing about New Yorkers where they think that they are the only people on the planet who have bodegas, when really the thing is they just call their convenience stores bodegas.
Okay, listen. I don't even want to get into the conversation about bodegas. Let's just talk for just a moment here about what happened. I'm only about the facts here, Leslie. I'm not trying.
We call it a Kona store in Louisiana. It's a Kona store.
I'm not trying to get into the discourse. I simply want to report the facts. What happened here is that someone posted a semi-annoying tweet being like, if you're not in New York, where do you, and you don't have bodegas, like, where do you go to, like, buy toilet paper and then get way too many M&Ms or something stupid, like some whack shit like that? And then everyone, it truly was like, at first people were like, haha, this person's like acting like, you know, there are not stores in New York. And then like a few hours later, it was everybody being like, how dare this person say that there are no stores anywhere but in New York? And I just really, this one was one of the ones where I was like, I came back in like midway and I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Because, you know, this got so big. And then by the next day, this other person, because of, like, I think the backlash to this first person, you know.
Yeah,
because
a lot of people were like, fuck New York,
New York.
Which is
people,
always fair.
It's like, whatever. I think it's – you live in, like – you know what I mean? Like,
you do live in a pretty cool city. Like,
you should be in New York. Like, why do you give a shit? Like, if you love New York so much and you're so pissed off, like, go out and enjoy the city you love so much. Like, go walk outside.
Hey, go to Central Park.
Yeah, go to Central Park or whatever the fuck you like. You know, go buy a hot dog. It's all good. You know, who cares? People talk shit about L.A. all the time, you know. Anyway, so by the second day, you know, of people just being like, fuck New York a little bit, someone who, by the way, it turns out is like a dildo blogger, does a post that's like, you know, people hate on New York, but we pay our taxes, like, fund your lifestyles. And I'm like, first of all, number one, whose lifestyles are being funded by, like, taxpayer dollars to begin with?
Yeah.
Other than, like, cops. You know what I mean?
The person who said this, I will name, that's Lux Alptrom. She is, you know, a writer, a sex blogger. Pretty strange character online.
Listen, I have no problem with dildo blogging to begin with. I just think that probably the tax contribution of someone doing dildo blogging is not really paying that much. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But I you know, unless she's also saying, like, I count Mike Bloomberg's money along with mine as we're both New Yorkers. You know what I mean? Like,
why? And, like, why are, like, adults having these conversations? These are things that, like, teenagers fight about, right? Like, who's the best city? Our city is the coolest, and we pay for all. Like, this is stuff, like you would talk about, talk shit, like, on a mesh board when you're, like, 20, not, like, 50, but, you know.
And let's talk just for a second here about, like, I don't give a fuck. I mean, what you're saying is there's a lot of rich people in New York.
Yeah.
When you say that, like, oh, New York pays a lot in taxes, more than other states, I'm like, yeah, I sure agree with you. Like, there's an inordinate amount of mega rich people in New York. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of very, very rich people there, you know, concentrated in one place. That went so far and got so weird.
And I think the original person was, like, trying to mock the thing that she ended up becoming. I think she was actually mocking people who make those posts sincerely. It was
no idea.
Yeah, it's the way she wrote it. I mean, it was a masterful tweet, obviously, in one way or the other. But it's unclear if the person was actually mocking the thing or doing the thing that they were mocking. But people took it as, like, someone literally saying that no one has, like, like 7-Eleven outside
New York. I feel bad for this person. You know, I also do kind of think that thing of New Yorkers is annoying and it's unnecessary. The way I feel about this, again, is we don't have to be on a public forum. You know what I mean? Like, all you New Yorkers, like, please talk with each other about how great the city is all the time. Go ahead. Go ahead and have a private, you know, Facebook group where you're all in there and saying, like, go to the, like, We Love New York Facebook group and everybody post in there. Like, it doesn't all have to be, you know what I mean? Like, it, this person didn't have to post for everybody. Like, New York's the only place where you can get M&Ms. You know what I mean? Like, you know, let's close things up again. Let's get the New York. I want there to be separate forums. I've talked about this for a long time. We need to get back to separate forums. We need everybody to go back to, you know, if you want to talk New York, you got to go to, like, you know, forums.newyorktalk.net or something like that. You know what I mean?
newyork.twitter.com.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they should take the trending topics, just separate ones, and you have to choose which one you want to sign up for. I would choose gaming Twitter. If they were like, now there's 70 Twitters, you have to sign up for only one, you bring your account to only one of them, I'd be like, I guess I'll go gaming. I'll just go gaming.
I would probably go pro wrestling, personally. I'd probably go pro wrestling.
Yeah, maybe I'd go politics, because that's the best place to stay and to, like, be annoying to everybody. That one was pretty strange. That one was a pretty strange one. Again, it all felt very unnecessary. And then this is, like, kind of what happens with these meltdowns. Is it's like an unrelated person comes in. And, like, oh, okay. Like, you know, this first person was not trying to say that. But then you come in and you're like, you know what? Like, people think, like coastal elites are, like, you know, annoying and, like, think less of everyone else. And I'm going to say, like, yes, we do. Here I am, like, someone not personally, you know, paying the taxes or whatever, but just because I live in a certain place, I literally do think, like, I own you, you know, like.
All right. So let's see what else we have. Should we did Movie Bob have one? I feel like Movie Bob has
Didn't
one. Like,
Movie Bob had a really big one a couple weeks ago, which was the thing with, what the hell is her name? Lindsay Ellis.
Oh yeah, we can't talk about that. That's too, like,
that's too dark.
That's too, like, crushing.
I should say, you know, we can't talk about Movie Bob on this podcast, because the last time we did, he had his, like, relatives, like, email me and shit. Like, he had his, like, cousin email me mad because of the episode we did on this podcast where I read excerpts from his book. So we won't talk about Movie Bob here, because he'll tattle on me to his niece, to his cousin.
His cousin.
He'll tattle on me to his movie cousin.
All right. So let's get into, you know, a little bit of the darker and more annoying meltdowns that
political,
are happening.
Political meltdowns.
Politics. Lots of people still arguing for some goddamn reason about the phrase defund the police and whether it is effective or not, whether it costs Democrats races. By the way, it didn't. That's just a narrative people are trying to create to give Democrats an excuse not to do anything about the police.
This is like being pushed so clearly post-election.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's clearly been, like, a full court press on, like, delegitimizing the idea of saying, you know, defund the police. And, you know, from day one post-election, it was like, I think one of Nancy Pelosi's, like, right-hand people being like, we got to stop saying this. Yeah, there's, like, a concerted effort.
They weren't even saying it in the first place. It was more like, we're going to blame this for how poorly we did in this election.
Right, right. The fact that anyone was saying this is the reason why we all did badly, which, by the way, you know, it's not true. The Democrats, like, did badly because they put up, like, shitty neoliberal candidates for the most part. And, like, it is this really tough needle they're trying to thread where they're like, well, it's because of this that we lost. And I'm like, but yeah, you didn't say that. You didn't say that.
Nobody was saying
it. You didn't endorse that. That's not what anybody was trying to say or whatever.
Like, who was talking about that in the, like, nobody was talking about defund the police or Black Lives Matter in the final weeks of the election. It just was not in the conversation.
This has been sticking in their craw since, like, June, and they've wanted to, like, litigate this, but they're like, not during the election. No, we can't do it now. Now after, we can, like, sort of, like, castigate everyone and use it as, like, the cudgel and everything like that. I just honestly find it bullshit. And I don't think it's costing anybody any votes. And, you know, it's just really frustrating because, frankly, I think that the phrase defund the police is like, you know, kind of restrained, you know?
Yeah,
we went from abolish ICE and everyone was like, well, you can't abolish ICE. And then this one, we're like, well, okay, how about since 2000, like every police force has been funded at a level to make themselves into tiny militaries, like even small police forces in Kenosha or whatever. They are as militarized as like the U.S. military. They all have huge, like, how about like the fact that they've all been funded at this level to buy all this stuff? How about we just defund that?
They want to. And the thing is, they're not doing anything about it anyway. So why does the phrase doesn't even matter, because it's not like the Democrats are making any efforts to do this. But Matt Iglesias, one of the worst people on the planet, just a soulless egg of a man. He did leave his job at Vox to start a newsletter, and I'm not joking about this, called Slow Boring.
Oof.
But this is what his take on defund the police is. In my IMO, the big problem with defund the police is that defunding the police is a bad idea. Austerity is bad. Public services are good. Policing is important. Man. And better policing will be more costly than bad policing, not cheaper. So, and he did, I don't want to read his old thread, but he did make it very clear that he's saying that saying to defund the police is an austerity measure, which, if you're, you know, if you're like me, you probably go to the dictionary and just double check the definition of austerity that every single human being that you've ever heard has ever used, just to make sure, because Matt Iglesias has invented a brand new one. Austerity means when you reduce a social public service to cut the budget or reduce the deficit or whatever. Defund the police is about taking the funds from the police and putting them towards other social services that don't involve sending the former slave patrols to help people who are having mental health crisis, right?
Right.
Like, you're not cutting the service per se. You're just choosing a different, you know, provider of the service and putting the money, the same amount of money, to better use for the citizens. So it is in no way, shape, or form austerity.
He's almost like, I swear to God, like Matt Iglesias is almost like the Get Fiscal account. You know what I mean? Like, this is like angling to find, you know, except that it's funny when Get Fiscal does it and it's like an intentional troll. Like, what Matt Iglesias is doing is like carving out a position and trying to find. This is like concern trolling is basically what it is. Like, he doesn't even believe this. Yeah. He's just trying to find like the language of the left to like go back and like hit the left with it. You know what I mean? And he feels like he's being so clever with it. This is like almost not worth engaging with even like as an actual idea, because it's just like if anything, you know, the right way to deal with Matt Iglesias is the way people do, which is just calling him an asshole and posting the pig poop balls at him. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, he gets it more than any human being possibly.
And he deserves it.
Yeah.
He deserves every little bit of it. And I endorse any kind of targeted harassment against Matt Iglesias.
100%.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I did want to mention, you know, about the scared liberalism around defund the police, which is just the silliest shit to worry about after Biden is going to be president. Like it's like they're pre-coming up reasons to be cowardly. Like, they're not even waiting until after the inauguration to get like scared of the left flank. Like, they so want a sister soldier moment, which they got from Biden, really. He said he's against defunding the police every time, and like kiss the cop every time they ask him. Yeah,
they get it from him every day. They, you know, Biden, like I am of the mind that I'm like, there's no moving Biden to the left. That was obviously a joke always to begin with. And like, Biden should just be like fully opposed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think a lot of groups want to work with Biden, and like, I get it. They also have like bigger responsibilities and stuff like that. You know what I mean? But like, we should be wary that like Biden's an incoming president, and you know, a lot of people kind of are trying to curry favor with him right now. But the actual real reality of it is like, this man like hates the left, you know, yeah. Like he has like made his entire career off of like, you know, sort of juxtaposing himself against the left. And that's what his presidency is going to be about, too. You know, I in a perfect world, like there'd be like huge protests against like Biden's inauguration. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this is like, I think this is going to be one of the worst presidencies for labor, you know, that there could be.
But he's been, you know, filling out his cabinet with people who mostly are garbage. Yeah.
A lot of it is Obama alums, but we're getting the Obama alums after they left the White House and went to do private sector work.
Yes.
So we're like getting them like not when they were like even like potentially idealist or believed in anything. We're getting them like after they all went to go work for Uber and thought they were done, you know, like they're all just like coming back.
Yeah, like some people were defending, you know, this guy named Brian Deese, who was, you know, brought up like because he actually did kind of start off as maybe a legitimate activist in the Obama administration. But he spent the past like 7 years at this big private equity firm at BlackRock, mm-hmm. you know, like helping their sustainable investing portfolio.
Because they thought that they were all done. They all thought that they were done in government. So time to cash in and try to do it in a way that like reads nice on, you know, the internet or something. Like, oh, I'm in with one of the sustainable fucking, you know, venture capital places. You know, but they all went to go cash in afterward, and well, now they've returned.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And even worse, honestly, you know, I was posting about this before, but I'm like, you know, I really do think like what happened with Prop 22 here in California, which was, you know, basically the app companies carving out what they do to not have labor laws apply to them more.
Yeah,
or less.
Yeah. So for people, for gig workers, they don't have, they're basically running the WWE scam where they're not employees. They're, independent contractors or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And they don't get any benefits or.
Right. In California, we have laws for people that are actually employees, like you have to get benefits and all this kind of stuff. And so what Uber did was they, you know, paid hundreds of millions of dollars, or, you know, tens of millions of dollars at least, to pass this proposition saying that those laws do not apply to people that work for them. And it worked. And, you know, that is basically going to happen. It's already, you know, they're testing the waters in New York. It's probably going to happen in New York. That'll probably happen across the country. And it's probably one of the biggest threats to labor right now is like this rewriting of the labor code for the kind of job that will be the only one available before too long.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it since the election, but the way they won it, they like when you open your, if you were in California, every time you opened your Uber app, you would get like an ad telling you to vote for this proposition in order to help make the drivers' lives better, right?
Yes, no, that was like, it was a huge, and you know, let's be frank here. Like, yes, there's a gigantic, it was the biggest proposition, most money ever spent on a proposition. And of course, like, you know, every single consulting house in California worked on it, every political consultant.
Even the ones that are going to work for like Democrats?
Of course, the ones who work for Democrats. It's all Democrat alums who did this. And the other thing about all this is like, I think this is one of the biggest threats to labor happening in the country right now is they're going to like roll out new laws making gig workers like a subclass. And then basically like that's going to be all the work that exists in America. And, you know, I just really don't think that Joe Biden's White House is going to do anything about it because fucking Kamala Harris's brother-in-law is lead counsel for Uber and her niece is like former head of strategy for Uber. So I just don't think it's going to happen under Joe Biden. I hope everybody pushes as hard as they can with Biden. And, you know, we should push him on every single thing. But I have low hopes, for for progressive policy under the Joe Biden administration.
Probably the best sign of that is the fact that Neera Tanden, what was she, the president of Center?
The CEO
for the Center for American Progress and prolific Twitter user. This is in her bio on CNN. Even CNN notices that she posts almost twice as much as Trump. If you're listening to the show, she has probably angrily posted at you and possibly blocked you.
I'm blocked by Neera Tanden.
It was very sad. I got blocked by her because she was basically lying about her participation in the 2016 planning for the Democratic platform. I forget which proposal she was fighting against, but she was lying publicly about it, and I posted the video of when she was actually saying, actually, no, we shouldn't support the Green New Deal or Medicare for All. And like Nomiki Const was like sitting next to her and like retweeted too, because like everybody saw her sitting there. In fact, she was sitting next to Cornel West and he had to sit there, you know what a centered, loving man that is. But you could just feel like how having to sit there and listen to her bullshit like was tearing him apart. Anyway, this woman who even is reviled by the most lovable people on the left flank of the Democratic
Party. I mean, she got like Matt Brunick fired. When Liz Brunick was like pregnant, I'm like, this person like truly is like a very petty and fucked up individual.
Yeah, she is going to be nominated to become the Office of Management and Budget Director.
I mean, she also, by the way, broke a union, busted a union in September 2019.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, they can talk about like, she'll be like, oh, because she also worked in the Bill Clinton administration, you know, or she worked in, yeah, under Bill Clinton.
Yeah, she's a Clintonite.
In welfare reform. She worked in welfare reform, which means, you know, cutting welfare under Bill Clinton. The last big thing she did was busting a union in 2019.
Yeah.
The Think Progress paper was going to unionize, and so they shut down the entire fucking thing.
Yeah, they shut down the entire website.
Which is just straight up union busting, but whatever, go ahead.
It's so wild that Think Progress does not exist anymore because of her, because that was like a huge website.
Right?
The last like story is like, about Kristen Stewart's you know, trying to promote Charlie's Angels. What a ignominious note.
No, that feels right, actually. That feels right for Neera Tanden, for Neera Tanden's Think Progress, union busted Think Progress, to like be about Elizabeth Banks's Charlie's Angels is going to be so important.
Oh man, and a lot of people were upset about this nomination because obviously Neera Tanden is not someone that is very well liked on the left wing of the party, and people were looking for a sign from the Biden administration that they were going to pick, give the Sanders people something, and instead he just gave them this big FU. And the funny thing that got reported is actually that this is kind of a reporter said this, that actually one of the Biden people told them, like, oh, we picked Neera because she is supposed to be one of our left people. This is a gift to the left to pick Neera Tanden. So that's where the Biden Overton window is.
Yeah. you know, that is Neera Tanden is not really well liked by anybody. But, you know, I really think the Neera pick was, you know, because she's just someone kind of who's in the Democratic ranks. But then also it was a nice fuck you to the entire like Sanders, you know, everybody that was involved with Sanders. I also like that Elizabeth Warren quote tweeted and was like, I think she's great or something like
that.
Oh
god.
Of course.
I do want to talk about how great it is that Elizabeth Warren was passed over. Like everybody thought she was going to be Secretary of Treasury. Right. Yeah. Well, not everybody thought. I think maybe only she thought.
They wanted that, yeah.
Yeah, but I did think it was so nice that she, you know, like, loyalty matters, and she, you know, stabbed the left in the back not once nor twice by not making an endorsement in 2016, and then running a terrible campaign, and then not dropping out for Super Tuesday, even though she knew she was going to lose, and the votes that she gathered would just be completely wasted.
And staying in only because she was able to get super PAC money from a millionaire.
Yeah.
Millionaire. Ran out of her own money, a billionaire, yeah.
Which she promised she would not do that. So it was nice to see her get absolutely nothing for it whatsoever. It's kind of funny because I feel like maybe that was even Biden's personal call. It's like, you know what? You betrayed Bernie. Like, why should I like reward you for that? You like turn your back on your friend. You're always hanging out with each other. You're supposed to be the left wing on the flank. You're sitting at their table at the fucking Senate, and he sees you like not be loyal to him. Why should he fucking trust you? Why should he bring you in?
If Joe Biden would just come out and say it, that would maybe get some goodwill from me, you know, if you could just go out and say it outright. So Aaron Rupar is this guy who does for Vox, like the he watches Fox News for them all day. That's what Aaron Rupar's job is for Vox.com. He watches Fox News all day and pulls clips from it and posts them to his Twitter. Right? Is that, am I like wrong?
Yes.
What this guy
that
does?
That is his job. His job is entirely dependent on Fox News, and he watches Fox News all day.
Okay. So this guy just watches Fox News all day and pulls clips from it. He has like 500,000 followers on Twitter because he, you know, posts a lot of clips, I guess.
Of Fox News,
because he works for a company that has like a clip pulling suite that he has access to. You know what I mean? Like, there's no real rocket science to this. What Aaron Rupar likes to do is every time anyone who is even like remotely left goes on Fox News, he makes a big fucking stink about it. Whether it's, you know, Glenn Greenwald going on Tucker Carlson, which everybody gets annoyed about. But even yesterday, he got pissed off about like Ro Khanna, I guess, going on the Laura Ingraham show. And then he posts a full clip of it. And it's Ro Khanna talking like about like, you know, it was good stuff, actually. It was him talking about like how the economy doesn't work for everybody and shit like that. And, you know, love her or hate her, you know, the and I obviously hate her. The Laura Ingraham show gets millions and millions of viewers every night. I also think that, you know, what they do over at CNN and Fox is pretty evil as well.
CNN and MSNBC.
I'm sorry, yeah, CNN and MSNBC. All for-profit cable news is evil, but Aaron Rupar really likes to carve out a special, like, little angry spot for whenever anyone associated with the left goes on Fox. Now, you know, is he upset when Pete Buttigieg goes on Fox? No, that he thinks is like good because that's Pete Buttigieg speaking truth to people who don't normally hear it or something.
Ro Khanna went on, Democrat from California, fairly progressive. He said, I'm not sure why any Democrat would validate Laura Ingraham's show by going on it for a friendly interview, but that's what Ro Khanna just did.
Wow, wow. You're going to validate Laura Ingraham like that? Like, go off, but whatever. Yeah. Couldn't be me, but yeah. Go off.
Yeah, October 22nd, just a few weeks ago, props to Pete Buttigieg for going on Fox News and routinely speaking truth to people who aren't used to hearing it.
His boss, Matt Iglesias, when he was doing his dumbass book about like 1 billion people, went on Ben Shapiro. And like talked about like American greatness and all this kind of shit. And like, where were the clips of that? What about when Matt Iglesias went on the Ben Shapiro show, dangerously platforming Ben Shapiro like that or whatever the fuck you said?
And yeah, so when Bernie went on Fox and did his town hall, which like everybody who watched it said was great and he won a bunch of people over, he had this to say. Bernie Sanders is going on the White Nationalism Network
about
the economy and jobs in scare quotes.
Wow.
Like, so,
hey, by the way, I would like to say about Aaron Rupar, this was passed on to me by Eamon Whalen, who's a writer.
Oh, let's get into it. This is fun.
I mean, this is like some crazy shit, actually. So Aaron Rupar is posting like all this shit about you're going on the fucking Laura Ingraham show. She says all this fucked up shit and it's about racist. The platform. She says racist stuff and
yes.
you're legitimizing her by saying that. Someone, this guy, Eamon Whalen messages me and posted about it too. You know, Aaron Rupar got in a bunch of trouble back in Minneapolis, you know, back in like 2012 because, and this is an article that Aaron Rupar wrote about a 2-year-old black kid that was killed like yes. by errant gunfire or something. And what Aaron Rupar does for this article is like looks into the boy's family and like his and like their criminal record and shit like yes. that. So there's a 5-year-old that was killed, and then Aaron Rupar looked into this 5-year-old's family basically on Facebook, like said all this shit about their like criminal history and stuff, even down to like this boy's grandmother's yeah. criminal history, which I'm like, I really don't think it's relevant. And then at the end of it, Aaron Rupar speculates on his own. Like, this is not like from anything. He says on his Facebook profile, Niz describes himself as such. I go to school and work all the time. I'm an executive producer, CEO, artist, father, gangsta, and gentleman. The Pie Press reports that he's a rapper performing under the name Business. And then this is Aaron Rupar saying this in authorial voice. He says, perhaps one of his favorite rappers inspired him to name his now deceased son Nizzle. According to Urban Dictionary, Nizzle is Snoop Dogg's way of saying. And then he just says the N-word there.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's how you would pronounce that kid's name, because it could be Nizzle.
I know.
So first of all, so he spells it wrong, right?
He does spell
the name
it wrong.
The name is not spelled N-I-Z-Z-L-E, which is what Snoop Dogg says.
Right.
You know, because it was like a huge thing in that year, right? Like people were always saying fascism my Nizzle, all right? So like there's a canonical spelling to it, which is not that child's name. He just came up with this.
Yes.
Of his own volition.
And so, you know, people got really upset by this. Like there was articles around there. There was even like, you know, somebody wrote like poetry about it, I guess. And people were upset by this because basically Aaron Rupar just speculated that this boy was named after the N-word.
Yeah.
While writing an article about how this boy's family, I guess, is maybe in some way like responsible for his death or like is like,
because of, yeah,
I guess because they also, I mean, and by the way, of course, you're like, would this article ever be written about a white kid who died? And of course, the answer is no. You know, in the world we live in now, you know, in Black Lives Matter and everything like that, I'm like, you know, what is more fucked up, actually? What is more fucked up? Is it Ro Khanna going on the Laura Ingraham show? Like, what actually contributes more to the problems? Is it Ro Khanna going on the Laura Ingraham show to say this economy doesn't work for everyone? Or is it a supposedly left or liberal blogger doing, like, takedown articles about dead kids' parents?
Yeah.
And then speculating that they're named after the N-word.
Yeah, and I do want to say, you know, that article was a long time ago. That was in the heydays
of blogging.
Now, listen,
It was 2012. Yeah,
Not that long ago, but I do want to say, I just want to make clear that if he weren't still, like, such an asshole now, I wouldn't even bring it up, right? Honestly.
Who would give a shit?
Yeah.
But this guy sucks. This guy sucks. And he's being like, you know, this, how dare you platform such bigotry? I'm like, well, how dare you platform such bigotry of your own?
Sir,
how dare you platform bigotry that you yourself wrote?
Yes. All right. And moving on to the final and perhaps biggest and darkest and probably long and ongoing, because we are going to get definitely a volume 2 of this, the Obama memoirs slow leaks. I say slow leaks. I believe the book is already out.
Oh, it's out, but people are just reading it. It's very boring.
Yeah, it's very boring, and like it's taking like a week for like people to find some tidbits.
Man, I can't even fucking handle it. This shit just like sounds so boring.
It's so long too, and it's the first one. It's longer than Dune. Read Dune. Don't read this.
Everything I've read about it is like it's so weird, and of course it's the most Obama thing ever. It seems like the entire thing is just him like explaining why they couldn't make a choice, or else like just trusting the Republicans like hook, line, and sinker, which I'm like, I don't even believe this guy believes this stuff. I think he wants people to believe that he does because he just didn't want to do anything because, well, I don't know, maybe he's CIA, but we'll talk about that another time.
I mentioned on the show before, like, you're never gonna know who the rock actually is as a real person, right?
Right.
You're never going to meet that person. I don't think.
Who is Obama? What does he want? I will never know.
There is an idea of a Patrick Bateman, some kind of abstraction, but there is no real me, only an entity, something illusory. And though I can hide my cold gaze, and you can shake my hand and feel flesh gripping yours, and maybe you can even sense our lifestyles are probably comparable, I simply am not there.
Patrick Bateman, I am simply not there. We will never know. So this book entirely, it is fiction. It is him, as you just said, it is him writing the story that he wants us to hear, not even necessarily believe. He wants, because some of this stuff is obviously like upsetting to people, but to the right people, it's upsetting to people on the left for the most part. And I really do think that's deliberate. I do not believe he believes a single word of anything in these memoirs. This is all just seems very, very like calculated.
I can't even handle it. I downloaded the entire audiobook of it, and I'm like, I can't even look at this file. I can't even look at this evil file. So Obama has a production company, which is truly bizarre even to begin with, which is, you know, he makes television shows now. A long time ago, they announced that the first thing that they acquired was this book, The Fifth Risk, which even is bizarre to begin with, because that's a book about the transition from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. So that's the book they're optioning was like about his presidency. And now they're making that, and they're adapting that into a sketch comedy show with Adam Ruins Everything. So I don't know what to tell you, folks, but, you know,
wait, they're adapting the thriller into the sketch comedy
show?
They
are adapting The Fifth Risk, which was a nonfiction book about the transition from Obama's administration to Trump's. Now that is being adapted into a sketch comedy show called The G Word, with High Hair Adam from Adam Ruins Everything. That's not a joke. That's all real reality.
Oh, Jesus.
That is just propaganda straight up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're making a show about how government functions and it's being produced by the former president and whose vice president is now like running the state, literally propaganda. You know what I mean? Like here's how government works from an impartial person. It's just a fun sketch show. That is literally actually so close to state media and propaganda. It's insane. You know, and also everybody's going to be so weird about Trump doing his reality streaming, whatever bullshit he does after office, and they should be. But it's also extremely weird that Obama did it first.
Yeah. Like he set the precedent. Yeah. You can't really like complain.
Obama did it first, and it wasn't even like because Trump was doing it already or anything like that. He just set up a production shingle after leaving the White House and now lives in Martha's Vineyard and appears only via Zoom. Anyway, so Obama's been doing this press tour over his book now, his big giant fucking tome of only the first, you know, term of his presidency, which already is his, like, he's already written, this is like his like fourth autobiography already, but whatever.
He's not that interesting.
I know. Honestly. I'm like, this guy wrote an autobiography about how like he went to college. Like this man after he went to college was like, well, that was interesting enough. I should write a.
Yeah, you're not Bret Easton Ellis, dude.
Anyway, so he's doing this big tour and he goes on Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert asks him like, well, you know, do you regret the drone strikes? And he says like, he's like, I don't regret them because it actually was, you know, there was far fewer casualties than there would have been, you know, with troops on the ground. You know, also that kind of like disregards the other option.
That's not really the question.
Of not killing anybody. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, given that what we're going to do definitely is be killing people in the Middle East, obviously it's better that more Americans don't die while we do it. I'm like, well, I just have to disagree with the premise there. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to say yes to every death. But yeah, like, it's pretty chilling footage watching this man sit with Quisling fucking Stephen Colbert, twisted and gollumified by access.
Can I say I've always hated Stephen Colbert? I have a place in my heart for Jon Stewart. Never got Stephen Colbert. Never liked him. Never liked his fucking weird religiosity that he tries to keep hidden, but is absolutely the driving force in his life.
It's there.
I don't like that.
It's there. I like that he talks shit to Bush, and I kind of always had a soft spot in my heart because he did that, you know, the fucking president's dinner or whatever.
I think that's the worst thing that ever.
Well, look, I hate presidential dinners now, and I now know about them, but I can't deny that when I saw that and I was like young, I was like, whoa, that was cool that he like talked shit to Bush or whatever.
Oh God. Your young impressionable mind.
Oh my God. It's
fucked up what he did to you. That's fucking grooming. That was grooming you to become a liberal.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, it didn't work, I guess, but, you know, it did for a little bit.
He did chime in on the defund the police thing as well, saying that it's a bad slogan.
I have a quick update here that I hadn't seen this yet. It's just from a couple hours ago. Crooked Media has an article up now called Near a Tandon or Bust.
Yes, I just saw that too. And they're framing it as, like, we need to protect her because the Republicans don't like her for her mean tweets. When in reality, it's everyone who doesn't like her for her mean tweets and the union busting and outing the victim of sexual harassment, doing an all-hands meeting.
Just a really vile person, truly. Just truly a bad and awful person.
Amazing she's not on the flight logs. Amazing.
Just a few years too late. Not important enough to be on the flight logs. Jealous of those who got to go.
Yeah.
She wants to be on the next flight logs. Whoever's doing the next one.
Oh yeah.
The Elon Musk flight logs.
Yeah. Yeah, so Obama said that you lose people.
He went on a fucking Snapchat show to say this.
That's so insulting.
He's on a vertical, like, orientation Snapchat show where the host asks him, he's like, obviously, like, socialism seems, like, cool because Bernie's cool and, like, AOC's cool. But, like, how do we make, like, capitalism cool? Like, that is the question he asks in the fucking thing. And he responds, like, you know, we lose with snappy slogans like defund the police.
Yeah, you lost a big audience the minute you say it, which makes it a lot less likely that you're actually going to get the changes you want done. Under Obama, the Republicans successfully abolished ACORN, which was this huge voter organization, and they didn't say reform ACORN. They said abolish ACORN. They got rid of it. They said defund Planned Parenthood.
Right.
There is a defund Planned Parenthood bill. These efforts have been successful. These efforts, it's not like people like I don't understand what the premise is. Like, yeah, you know, Democrats get mad when Republicans say defund Planned Parenthood, but then like a few of them seem to break off because the other side is so stringent and strident and demands what they want and says what they want. It has worked in the past few years.
And also, obviously. By the way, even if you are a believer in stupid fucking incrementalism, which actually doesn't work, even just basic negotiation tells you,
yes,
like, you start further and you end with less. You know what I mean? Like, even if you want to make the fucking stupid, you know, incrementalism argument, you don't start. Whatever. We've had this conversation. I'm just exhausted.
Yeah. Well, let's dive back into the dark, the six hat world of Obama's memoirs. So he said when we talk about the Reverend Wright situation, and for people who don't remember, Reverend Wright was Obama's reverend. This is a man that he knew, went to his church, and Obama at the very first opportunity sold this fellow black man out because he was scared white people were going to get mad at him, basically, because these clips showed Reverend Wright saying true things about how racist America is and how 9/11 was the result of fucking blowback from our warmongering across the globe. And Obama deliberately distanced himself from him, disinvited him from stuff. And this is a man, like, he knew, right? Like, they weren't just, I don't think they were just like casual acquaintances, but he really did do him dirty, because Reverend Wright is, you know, pretty far to the left of Obama. And he talks about that here. And, you know, it was a big question, like, why was Obama so quick to distance himself from him when he sat and listened to these sermons? Well, Obama gives you the story that he thinks you want to hear about this, and I'll just read it. that Reverend Wright came to pastor in an overwhelmingly white denomination gives some indication of his practical side. Not only did the United Church of Christ value serious scholarship, something he emphasized every Sunday, but it had the money and infrastructure to help him build his congregation. So this is Obama acknowledging that Reverend Wright was pretty fucking cool with white people. Like, he was good at his fucking job. He raised money and people liked him. What was once a state church with fewer than 100 members grew to 6,000 during his tenure, a rollicking, bustling place containing the multitudes that make up Black Chicago, bankers and former gang members, Kente robes and Brooks Brothers suits, a choir that, wow, some really interesting dichotomies from a Black man. That's a really weird thing.
From bankers to former gangsters?
Okay. A choir that could rock classic gospel and the hallelujah chorus in a single service. His sermons were full of pop references, slang, humor, and genuine religious insight that not only prompted cheers and shouts from his members, but burnished his reputation as one of the best preachers in the country. That's the good part. He was able to bring the two types of Black people together, the gang members and the bankers along with many whites. But it did
funny, like, Obama's being like, this guy was really, really good at it. He was so good at preaching, and then the next paragraph is going to be, and so I destroyed him.
Yeah. And now this is him remarking back when he had no problem with Wright, but he didn't say it, but this is the narrative he wants us to think. There were times when I found Reverend Wright's sermons a little over the top. In the middle of a scholarly explication of the book of Matthew or Luke, he might insert a scathing critique of America's drug war, American militarism, capitalist greed, or the intractability of American racism. Rants that were usually grounded in fact, but bereft of context.
Wow.
Grounded in fact, but bereft of context.
Well, of course, the context is that, those kids were selling weed.
Like, it's so funny to actually for him to list the drug war there, too, and first, right? Because you could say, all right, on a certain level, Obama is committed to defending militarism, capitalism, right? But, like, why would he defend the drug war here? That's so bizarre to me. But he continues, often these speeches sounded dated, as if he were channeling a college teach-in from 1968 rather than leading a prosperous congregation that included police commanders, celebrities, wealthy business people, and the Chicago school superintendent. And every so often, what he said was just wrong, edging close to the conspiracy theories one heard on late-night public access stations or in the barbershop down the street. It was as if this erudite, middle-aged, light-skinned Black man, mentioned his skin color for some reason, were straining for street cred, trying to keep it real. Or maybe he just recognized, both within his congregation and within himself, the periodic need to let loose, to release pent-up anger from a lifetime of struggle in the face of chronic racism, reason, and logic be damned. Whole lot going on there.
So it came time to destroy him. When it came time for me to become president, he had to be destroyed.
I hate to say projection, because we do not know what is in the black abyss that Obama calls a soul, but him claiming that Reverend Wright was the light-skinned, affluent black man who was trying to get street cred is such amazing, amazing projection from the person that I think Obama might be. It's probably, like, completely and utterly ridiculous. Like, the fact that, like, and Obama thinks it's a knock that this guy is speaking, criticizing the drug war in front of these police commanders who go to his church because it's popular. Obama is basically saying he kind of didn't get, like, that Reverend Wright was actually trying to do, which is, like, make the church really popular and then actually influence all these bougie assholes who go to the church to be seen, which is why Obama went to that church, to be seen and to make his way in politics. Like, Reverend Wright was actually trying to, like, give some gospel to these like sorry sacks of shit. And Obama is just like, he does not understand. He didn't even contemplate it. Or at least the Obama of the book, the character Obama in the book, did not even think about that.
I can't even begin to imagine how twisted my mind would be if I read 800 pages of Obama's Monday morning quarterbacking about every decision he ever didn't make, pretty much.
All right, folks, that was Struggle Session. Stay offline. It's bad.
It's going to be really bad this month, I think.
Yeah.
Online game. You know, yourself an online game and
find a safe place to hide out, hibernate during this wild out winter. Peace.
Bye.
Run. Hold nothing, dear. First, don't leave your post. Panic pallet. Fear in real time. Take what you can.